Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. And on December the 7th, 1941, the Japanese Air Force attacked the American fleet berthed in Pearl Harbor in the Pacific. Alan Johnston has been listening through the archives from that time.
It is early on December the 7th, 1941, in the Hawaiian Islands, and the calm of a sleepy Sunday morning is about to be shattered. Out over the Pacific and closing in fast are squadrons of Japanese bombers and fighter planes. At 8:05, they strike at Pearl Harbor. A cinema newsreel captures some of America's initial shock and outrage.
They have learned well the technique of surprise mass murder. The American naval base at Pearl Harbor in Hawaii was the target for the fiercest raids. The $100 million stronghold, mightiest outpost of U.S. defense, was bombed just after dawn. First reports say 150 enemy planes swooped over the base. Dispatches unconfirmed as this is released say two U.S. warships went down in the attacks.
In fact, the attack was far more devastating than those first reports suggested. The bombs had poured down and fighter aircraft screamed in low over the harbour, blazing away with their guns. Within 2 hours, 5 battleships had been sunk and another 16 damaged. But just up the road, in the city of Honolulu, in a luxury hotel on the famous Waikiki Beach, the drama of the raid began to unfold very, very gently for a journalist called Joseph C. Harsh.
The first thing I remember is waking up and hearing some explosions. I woke my wife and said, "Dearest, you've often asked me what an air raid sounds like. Listen to this, it's a good imitation." We dozed off again, and I don't know how long it was before she woke me and said, "Come on, sleepyhead, it's time for our morning swim." So we got up and we put on bathing clothes and we went out onto the beach and we had a swim and we came up from the water, and as we came up towards the hotel, we noticed a man standing there who was looking intently down towards Pearl Harbor. And we looked too, he was so intent, and noticed great columns of black smoke going up in the air. And I said, "What's going on?" And he said, "Well, I guess it's almost over now. They must have had another big exercise." He assumed, you see, that it was a war exercise. I assumed the same thing because one was so accustomed to war exercises of all kinds being a routine thing. We then got dressed. We went into the dining room of the hotel, which was full of top naval officers in Sunday white uniform having their customary breakfast. No sign of excitement or uncertainty of any kind. We sat down, and while we were chatting, waiting for our breakfast to come, my wife said, "Joe, what's that ship doing?" And I looked out and noticed a ship doing a curious zigzag and splashes in the water around it. And I said, "I don't know. I suppose it's just another exercise." And she said, "Well, I suppose it is." And there were, mind you, admirals, full admirals, sitting around me, seeing these same phenomenon and not being in any way disturbed. A couple of minutes later, I suppose, she said to me, "Joe, where is that ship?" And I looked up, and it had disappeared. And I think that's the first moment when there entered into my subconsciousness a feeling that something was going wrong, that this might be something more than a normal exercise. But it was at that moment that a woman came in to the dining room in a sort of semi-hysterical condition at the top of her voice, screaming, "The battleships are burning. The Japs have attacked." And this voice carried across the room, and people all turned and looked. An officer, who was obviously a friend of hers, got up and said, "Oh, you're imagining things." And she said, "No, no, I could see the red balls under the wings of the planes. They were right overhead. They were machine gunning. And I saw them fly at the harbor." And then, you know, that's when the penny began to drop for different people at different paces. One by one, you'd see a man sort of shake himself and then get up and go to the door and go off. Not everybody at once. And I was not certainly one of the first to get the implication of it.
Joe Harsh and the admirals around him at that breakfast would soon become fully aware of the severity of the Japanese onslaught. More than 2,400 Americans had been killed, and the next day, President Roosevelt addressed Congress.
"Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan."
Congress backed a declaration of war with only one vote against. After many months of gathering tension, America was finally drawn into the great confrontation that was spreading around the world.
"All America lines up with the president in this critical hour. Already at his command, the Navy is on the move. America's prayers. Go with the men on land and sea and air, fighting for civilization and freedom."
The cinema newsreels portray a nation full of fight, immediately bouncing back from the blow at Pearl Harbor. But that wasn't the whole story. This more considered radio commentary, aired in the first week after the attack, reveals a much less assured, rather shaken America, engulfed by wild and confusing rumors.
"We went through Monday still expecting American forces to strike out in the way we had been taught to believe they must do. Rumors of bombing attacks on Tokyo and Osaka swept the country. They were untrue. So did rumors of a great naval battle between the Japanese and American fleets. Also untrue. By Tuesday, we were just beginning to peer over the walls of our indignation and astonishment. And in doing so, we were beset by a still more absorbing feeling, humiliation. The country began to feel jittery. Rumors swept through every street. San Francisco, the night before, had had air raid warnings. On Tuesday, New York had two of them. The San Francisco alarms had been genuine. The New York ones had been blunders of some sort."
But listening to the broadcasts as the days pass, you get a sense of those initial uncertainties evaporating quickly and the nation's mood evolving. This radio commentary, carried 2 weeks after Pearl Harbor, painted a picture of ordinary Americans both squaring up for the fight and going about their business as usual, with the streets of New York packed with people shopping for Christmas.
"America's wartime Christmas and a traditional New Year's Eve will not be grim, although Remember Pearl Harbor promises to become one of the great historic battle cries. Always a tuneful country, America's famous Tin Pan Alley has produced the first batch of war songs in record time. One of the most popular heard over the radio begins, 'Goodbye, Mama, I'm off to Yokohama.'
Say goodbye to Mama, you're off to Yokohama, so be brave and be strong, you won't be gone long."
"Recruiting stations for all branches of the services are still swamped with applicants. 30 men slept on improvised cots outside a Marine recruiting center, so they could be first in line in the morning. A 12-year-old boy wrote to a rear admiral asking he be allowed to serve as a cabin boy. His heroism and patriotism were held up as a national example."
"Say goodbye to Mama, you're off to Yokohama for your country, your flag and me.
Be brave and be strong, goes the song, you won't be gone long. It even suggests that the boys might all be home in just 6 months. But in reality, the war that began for America on that Sunday morning at Pearl Harbor would last well over 3 years. Japan wouldn't be defeated until the summer of 1945.
Alan Johnston. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
I'm Helena Bonham Carter, and for BBC Radio 4, this is History's Secret Heroes, a new series of rarely heard tales from World War II.
They had no idea that she was Britain's top female codebreaker.
We'll hear of daring risk-takers.
What she was offering to do was to ski in over the high Carpathian mountains.
Of course it was dangerous, but danger was his friend.
Subscribe to History's Secret Heroes wherever you get your podcasts.